From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. Add along with your calls some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, reading on your iPhone, your tablet, your computer at night may actually interfere with how well you sleep at night. That's a big issue. This is not a small issue at all, since a lot of us are connected to our electronic media pretty much 24/7. And then
happily, that's not a problem for me.
Yeah, no, it's not a problem. That's right. That's right. You're the Luddite. In fact, I don't even know if you have electricity in your house. Maybe you just use candles. And then social ties, preserving memory. Here we've got good research from mice.
From mice.
That's right. The mice are leading the way when it comes to social research. Shocking, but, you know, mice, you know, they're social creatures just like we are.
And what's our recipe?
Grilled peaches with burrata. And you can ask me what burrata is, but I'm not going to tell you until we actually have the recipe.
Okay, I can wait. I think I can wait. Yeah. 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. And to the phones we go now with a listener in Coon Valley, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Zorba and Tom.
How can we help?
Well, I'm a woodworker in my 50s, and a few years ago I was experiencing some hand pain, so I went and had it checked out, and they x-rayed it, and it showed the onset of some arthritis in the middle knuckle in my dominant hand, which I'm left-handed. It doesn't bother me much until I get to the sanding part, where I'm running a palm sander and doing a lot of hand sanding. And then I think the vibrations and the repetition increase the discomfort. I tried using my right hand more, but that started hurting too. And I really can't take NSAIDs because a couple years back I had a bleed in my GI system. I do wear some palm gloves when I'm sanding a lot to try to absorb some of the vibrations from the sander. And I've been taking glucosamine chondroitin. That seems to help. Reduce the pain, but it's still there. What I'm looking for is something I can do to kind of slow down the progression, if there's some stretches or just keep them bending, or what I can do to, because I plan on woodworking for quite a few years yet.
Sure. How long has this gone on for? When did it first start?
Oh, probably 3-4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Any injuries that started this off? Anything?
Not in that hand.
Uh-huh. Knees, hips, any other joints that bother you at all?
Well, I used to be a farmer, and I was having some right knee discomfort, and the glucosamine kind of cleared that up. I mean, that was quite a few years ago, and I really haven't had trouble with that type of pain. I do have a different pain in my knee now, but it's been going on for a year and a half, and nobody can figure out what's going on with that.
So, well, first of all, you've got arthritis. I mean, you know, we could x-ray you up the kazoo. It wouldn't make any difference. I mean, what you're describing really is arthritis. So the real question is, what do we do for it? So there are two things to look at. First of all, from a drug point of view, you can't take anti-inflammatories, like you said. But I always tell people to do a two-week trial of arthritis strength Tylenol generic. And let me just explain a bit what that is. First of all, it's a 650 milligram tablet, bigger than the regular tablet. But more importantly, it lasts for 8 hours. Regular Tylenol lasts for 4 hours. You've got to take it all throughout the day, and nobody can do that. But more importantly, it lasts for 8 hours. Regular Tylenol lasts for 4 hours. You've got to take it all throughout the day, and nobody can do that. But I always tell people, let's see what that does. Maximal dose it, 2 in the morning. 2 sometime in the middle of the day, lunchtime, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, something like that, 2 at bedtime for 2 weeks. So it's 2, 2, 2, and do it for 2 weeks. See what that does. And the reason is you want to know what a maximal dose of arthritis strength Tylenol in your system really does and whether or not it reduces your pain, because then you've got an idea of whether it's going to work or not. So maximize the dose of that and see what that is. Because some people say, you know, this is a day I'm going to be working a lot. I'm going to take my arthritis strength Tylenol 1 or 2 or 3 times a day, and then I'm not as bothered by the weekend. I'm not going to take it. But initially, you want to give yourself a two-week trial. The second thing is you're right about the exercises. What exercises can you do? So you can go to a physical therapist, but on the other hand, you can go to YouTube, and YouTube is awesome. Okay. And then the thing about exercise is, especially with the hands, there are things that are called TheraBands that we use. They're kind of rubber bands. They're like thick rubber bands. They're wider. They're like 4 inches. They're made out of some kind of elastic material. They're very good for exercise. You often can get them from your doctor, get them from your hospital, get them from Amazon.com. But some of the exercises use the TheraBands. They're really, really good. Thing about exercise is, once again, you got to do it on a regular basis, and you got to do it for a month. In other words, you're not going to know what role exercise does. If you do it once or twice, and you say, I don't think it's going to work. Well, it didn't work once or twice. But study after study after study have shown that regular exercise, you may not get an effect for 2 weeks, but you're going to know at 1 month whether or not that effect is going to last. And I think a combination of exercise to get those joints as mobile as you can, and then knowing when you need the arthritis strength Tylenol could maybe reduce that pain by 50 to 75%. That would be my guess.
Okay. What about those hand compression springs?
You mean the things that you squeeze?
Right. Is that going to be bad or is that going to help?
I don't know. You try it and see whether or not your pain gets better. That's the way you do it. Are you doing that now? Is that what you're doing
now? No, I don't, but I just thought of that now.
Yeah, they're usually, for people who want to improve the strength of their grip, how strong is your grip?
I think it's fairly good.
Yeah, if you're not, I mean, that's really what they're for. They're not range of motion exercises. They're strength. It doesn't sound like strength is the issue. It sounds like the joints are the issue. I don't think those hand things would do very much. They wouldn't do it. Unless you want to go into bodybuilding and decide you want to.
I think I'm a little past that stage.
You say you used to be a farmer. You sound too young to have retired. What are you doing now?
I'm a professional woodworker.
Oh. Yeah, yes. You gave up farming because of what?
Because they had an offer on our farm that I couldn't refuse.
Yes. yes.
And prices weren't good.
Well, let's see how this works. Those are my two recommendations. I think you're going to get some help from that. And let us know what happens, really. We'd be interested.
And thanks so much for the call. 800-462-7413 is our number if you have a question for Zorba. But Zorba, before our next call, how nighttime tablet and phone use disturbs sleep.
That's right. Now, I know, Tom, when you go to sleep at night, I know the first thing you do is you check your email, you go on Google, you look at the sites that you're looking for, whatever newspapers you happen to be looking at, then you check the memos, the texts, you go and you fly into WhatsApp, see what's there, and then you Snapchat a few photos and send it to your friends,
That's what I do.
That's typical Tom Clark behavior. Yeah. He may sound like a Luddite, ladies and gentlemen, but actually, this is a texter maven. Yeah. He actually can do that. But do you read something before you go to sleep?
No, I don't.
You don't. What's your sleep pattern? I'm serious now.
We watch a little TV.
Do you watch TV in bed?
No.
You don't watch TV in bed. Okay, so
no, I get in bed and go to sleep.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So it's very common for people to actually watch TV in bed. That's a very common thing. TV in the bedroom is like almost the number one thing people did years ago when they got a second TV, so they could watch it from their bed and go to sleep. And we know that bedtime television before you go to sleep can actually disturb your sleep because there's just a lot of stimulation from the TV itself in terms of visual stimulation and in terms of auditory stimulation. But this particular study showed that reading, for instance, from a newspaper, magazine, a book, is different from reading on a tablet. And by the way, this goes along with a study in the BMJ years ago that showed the same thing. So in the study, they took 9 people, put them 10 nights, I like it, 9 people, 10 nights, in a sleep laboratory for 5 nights. Mm-hmm. They read before they went to sleep with an iPad, and then for 5 nights, they read print, read print edition for the iPad. And then they measured their sleep. They measured a bunch of things, how long it took for sleep onset, how deeply they slept, whether or not they had melatonin, high levels or low levels, which affect sleep, REM sleep, a whole bunch of things. And the volunteers, how much sleepy did they feel, how alert they were in the morning. And basically, they found that people who were on their iPads did not sleep as well by the measurements. Mm-hmm. REM sleep, wakefulness, how sleepy they were in the day, and so on. Now, the study that was about 2 years ago that I commented on that had to do with the BMJ study looked at children. Same mm-hmm. issue, but kids are more likely to do Snapchat, check their email, yeah. all the stuff I ascribe to you are actually pretty common teenage and young adult stuff. And they found that kids and young adults who did that were the same thing. They generally had insomnia and had trouble sleeping, mm-hmm. decreased REM sleep, sleepier during the day. It's clear that when we read on paper, it is different than when we read with a screen that we tend to interact with. It's different visually in the brain. And it may be setting off different hormones, such as melatonin, on how it works. And so I think the bottom line from this is if you read before you go to sleep, read on paper. That's the bottom line.
Okay.
Read on paper, book, magazine, whatever you're going to do, and stay away from electronic media. Now, it's interesting. This study did not look at Kindles. Now, Kindles have a different visual effect than an iPad because with a Kindle, you can turn down – you can do that with an iPad, turn down the display and so on. But this specifically looked at iPads, and the studies have done it. So I don't know whether or not a Kindle fits into the iPad part or the magazine part, but I recommend if you're going to go to sleep, read something on paper. I go to sleep every night, and I read things on paper because I have to read before I go to sleep.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, we welcome a caller in Marco Island, Florida. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I have a question that's been kind of burning within our family unit. My husband's mother always reminds us that we need to eat beans 3 times a day, and any type of beans, from green beans to yellow beans to black-eyed peas, anything in the legume family.
Mm-hmm.
And they will, if we are having trouble sleeping at night, she says, get up and eat a tablespoon of beans, and you'll be able to go right back to bed.
Yeah.
And even our sister-in-law's Crohn's disease, she swears it will cure it, but, of course, the sister-in-law's doctor says no, it might kill her. So I'm just trying to ask your opinion.
Okay.
On
well,
the bean
you
say, dilemma.
You say your husband's mother has this idea?
Well, it's not. Yes, it's her nutritionist up, or up, you know, in her hometown area. So
yeah. Well, your husband's mother is right.
Beans.
Is right. She is.
Well, wait a second. Wait a second. Wait a second.
Mother
Tom.
Is always right.
Wait a second. It's exactly. So
beans. For breakfast is the new.
So yes. Beans. Eating beans. I can just imagine what the household kind of smells like eating all of those beans. So eating beans. Her nutritionist said, eat beans three times a day.
Well, we've been there, and we've had refried beans for breakfast.
Refried.
And we are, yep, and we're not allowed to have any fruits with sugar in them, like bananas or strawberries or vegetables that have sugar, because that has been cut out of the diet as well.
That has been cut out of the diet. And if you're having trouble sleeping in the middle of the night, get up and have a teaspoon of, like, baked beans.
any beans. So, you know, she says anything in the legume family, like chickpeas or, you know, baked beans if they're in your fridge, or green beans.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you just eat those and you'll be able to fall right back to sleep.
Uh-huh. You know, I have to tell you, I am always blown away by diets in America and different diets. And I read a book a number of years ago. I can't remember the name of it, but it basically was an encyclopedic book of the history of vegetarianism and vegetarianism as a movement, as sort of a political movement. I mean, it's neither Republican nor Democrat. It's the vegetarians versus the vegans versus the omnivores. You know, it's the nutritionist movement, mm-hmm. with the vegetarians being sort of the most orthodox and strict, you know, born-again vegetarians, basically, is, mm-hmm. is what they are. And I hear a lot of variations, you know, the paleo diet, the grapefruit diet that used to be very popular to lose weight. But I have never heard of the all-bean diet. And this is a variation. Now, I've always been interested in writing a book about gas, because we have lots of people who are interested in gas because they don't like to, I'm going to use the F word, fart. They don't mm-hmm. like to fart. They don't even like to say it. So we say, pass gas, and we go, mm-hmm. you know, rumblings in the stomach. We'll do everything to not say the word fart, which is, by the way, an acceptable word.
Why don't you say it a few more times?
I've said it enough. I know that it's acceptable. It's not one of the four-letter words that's dinged by, you know, by the powers to be. But if you have the all-bean diet, you're going to tend to pass gas a little bit more often than not. And I just think it's very interesting, nutritionist. So your mother-in-law, how long has she been on the all-gas diet?
He's been eating beans for at least 4 years, four or 5 years.
And is she married? She's still married?
Yes. Yeah. Yep, yep. She's 75.
And her husband eats beans all the time?
He eats what is put in front of him, yep.
He eats what is put in front of him. I love it. I love it. So the real issue, if I may give you some advice, the real issue is, how do you gently handle your mother-in-law's there's a Yiddish word, verkackte diet. Verkackte means, it's another word for sort of loony. Now, and I mean it, but it's a respectful looniness. It's not
okay.
It's not a bad looniness. How do you handle it? And I think you say something like, Mom, if you call her Mom, or what do you call your mother-in-law, by the way? Do you call her Mom? Or?
I just call her Carol or Mom. Mostly Carol.
I would say, Carol, you know, individualizing your diet is important, and I think beans are important for you. And I'm going to have beans on a regular basis, but not quite as often, because I spoke to Dr. Zorba Pastor and Tom, and they said the diet was one of those unusual diets that can be that can be used for some people who like to eat beans. Mm-hmm. And and then I would ask her if she has a gas problem.
But I think she's been eating them so long now her body has really adjusted.
Or she and her husband have adjusted to gas in the house, one of the other things.
Or, yes. But there is no real health benefit from eating beans 3 times a day, 7 days a week.
Not at all. Legumes are great. Okay. Legumes are important. Legumes have lots of good nutritional value to them, the fiber in them, everything else. But eating beans 3 times a day, I don't think it has much value, although it may be a topic for a good diet book that might be on Dr. Oz's best-selling list.
Well, that's another show I stay away from, so...
Well, thanks so much for your call. We really appreciate it.
800-462-7413, our number. That's 800-462-7413. And before we take a short break, Zorba, we love it when our listeners post on our Facebook page, which means it's time again for Facebook Feedback. Facebook Feedback. You ready, Zorba?
Yeah, I'm ready. I can't wait. I can't. I'm holding my breath. I am so excited waiting for Facebook feedback. I actually do like it. I like Facebook.
Yeah, don't hold your breath, though. First, Fritzy in Kenosha, Wisconsin writes, I'm trying to find a Mediterranean diet for dummies. Can you recommend a website or book that is easy and doesn't cost a ton of money that will help me so I can start this?
Well,
wait. Yep. Everything I try seems to throw extremely detailed recipes at me, and I'm too tired and end up throwing out a ton of food. Please help me. And it's signed, Dysfunctional Foodie.
That's really good. Well, first of all, if you go to Amazon, you put in Mediterranean Diet for Beginners, you'll get a wonderful cookbook. And I think that is the name of the cookbook, Mediterranean Diet for Beginners. Pops up, popular cookbook. It's a good introduction to the Mediterranean diet. I've looked at the book. It's got 40 recipes. It's got a couple of meal plans. And it really, really nails down what we're doing. It's a diet plentiful fruits and vegetables, less in terms of animal food. It's not what you would call a high-carb, low-fat diet. It's a diet for – it's the king of diets. So, yeah, Amazon it. I'll call it as a verb. Amazon it, Mediterranean Diet for Beginners, and you'll pop up with a good book.
Okay, next, Tracy writes – for the last 4 months, my husband has been belching, and it smells like sulfur or a fart. It's really bad. What do you think is causing this? Help. It is causing issues at his work and at home.
So everyone's upset. Well, that's a good question. You know, this has to do with the bacteria that are living in his stomach and are probably living in his colon. He may be belching and farting at the same time. We're not really sure about it. But it often, sometimes probiotics will help. So one of the easiest probiotics is yogurt. Yogurt is lactobacillus, mm-hmm. cheap, easy, inexpensive probiotic. I tried Activa, has more probiotic than some other yogurt. And I would try some Activa 3 times a day for maybe a week or 10 days. That's number one. Number two, if that particular thing fails, then I would probably try a week or two of Metamucil. And the reason is Metamucil, which is high fiber, get the generic Metamucil, that goes through the colon, can sometimes sort of reestablish the normal flora in your colon. And believe it or not, the flora in your colon affect the flora and the bacteria that live in your stomach. So Metamucil, quick, easy way to do a high fiber diet. And the third thing is I would consider separation from your husband if that fails. You know, go on the street, find a new hubby that doesn't smell as bad.
Now, John in Knoxville, Tennessee, sent us a photo he took of a vending machine and wrote, "Zorba, I thought you might get a kick out of this, or maybe you're feeling just as perplexed as I am."
Okay, so I got to look at the vending machine. Okay, the vending machine says lifestyle snacks. So I like it. Better choices, better bodies. This is hysterical. Better choices, better bodies.
So the top row
are chips. Okay, so three different kinds of potato chips. The middle row are chips, Pop-Tarts, and the bottom row are candy. And they said better choices, better bodies. You know what? I don't think so.
Finally, Zorba, Brett in Minneapolis, Minnesota, wrote the following. "Dr. Pastor, you are a Wisconsin treasure. My parents listened to you on Wisconsin Public Radio regularly. I remember you on TV in Madison growing up. Continued success to you and yours."
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Let's keep a Facebook love coming, and you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe's coming up along with more of your calls right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. With Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. You'll find a line open now at 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, grilled peaches with burrata.
Burrata. Oh, you can do that. You know, a lot of people can't do that. They can't, you know,
roll their,
you know, you must have learned that as a kid. My wife can't do it.
I can do that. It means I'll like this recipe, right?
I think so. You know, if you can pronounce it, you can like it. Now, burrata is a type of Italian cheese, probably most similar to mascarpone. You know, sort of it's a mild cheese. It's more like mascarpone or more like very fresh mozzarella, where it has a more of a texture, less of a taste. And you know what mozzarella tastes like.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a bland. It's the opposite of cheddar and Parmesan. And then it can be used in a variety of things. So, for instance, mascarpone is used in a variety of desserts, and this is sort of akin to that, not as sweet as mascarpone.
It's interesting. This is grilled peaches with burrata. If you use a spicier or more flavorful cheese, it might override
peaches. It would totally override. I don't think it would taste very good. It would taste very different. I mean, in my brain it wouldn't taste very good, but it certainly would taste different. So, and this is kind of a good thing to have. It's kind of an interesting dessert, and it's simple, easy. People can actually do this without having to throw the whole kitchen sink into it.
Okay.
So let's start out with a quarter of a cup of balsamic vinegar.
Quarter cup balsamic vinegar.
Now, where do you get your balsamic vinegar? in your house. That's right. Now, there are different types of balsamic vinegar. So you want to find one that you like, store. you know, in a store that you like. I usually have a couple of different kinds at home, and I would use a milder kind of balsamic vinegar.
Okay.
But regular vinegar will not substitute for balsamic vinegar.
Okay.
It's got to be balsamic vinegar. A half teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper.
Half a little tea, freshly ground black pepper.
Three peaches, halved, pitted, ripe, yet firm.
Three peaches, halved, pitted.
Go ahead.
Ripe. Ripe yet firm.
That's right. So you can't use canned peaches in this. You cannot use canned peaches.
Okay, right.
Canned peaches. And I know that you wouldn't even think of using canned peaches.
Oh, I never would.
In this recipe.
No,
that would
in
not,
this
that'd
recipe.
Be,
no.
That'd be the farthest thing in the world from you to do. You need a little olive oil, by the way. And you need 8 ounces of burrata. That's basically about two balls. They come in, they're like if you go into the Italian grocery store or you go into the store, mm-hmm. they're in a little like glass jar usually in these two balls are there.
That's olive oil and 8 ounces of burrata, two balls.
Burrata. That's right. If you go to your local Italian grocery store, gourmet store,
okay.
or you can probably get a bunch of other stores. And of course salt and pepper.
Okay. Salt.
pepper. That's right. You got it. You got the whole thing. So in a small saucepan, set it over medium heat. Add the balsamic vinegar. Cook it until it reduces that quarter cup by about half. It becomes kind of syrupy. Be very careful because it happens kind of right away. And then set it off to the side, and it'll thicken a little bit more as it mm-hmm. cools. Now, fire up your grill. Put it in, gas grill, charcoal grill, whatever you want to. Fire it up. Brush the peaches with a bit of olive oil. Grill it over high heat. Cut side down for about 2 minutes. Remove it from the grill, and then immediately brush it with balsamic vinegar glaze. Top with a spoonful of burrata, and then transfer it back to the grill under low heat, just enough to warm the burrata and let it melt a little bit.
That really sounds good.
You see, shocked, aren't you? Aren't you? So it melts a little bit. It's the melt that got you. It was kind of like, but it melts just a little bit. Transfer it to a plate, little salt and pepper, and if you want to, you can put on like crushed pumpkin seeds or something on top of it. But I think I would just have it plain.
Yeah.
Isn't
everybody,
that good?
Everybody can memorize this recipe because there's so few ingredients. But in case they can't,
as you said, it sounded good.
Yeah.
It sounded good.
It does.
They can come to our website, zorbapastor.org. That's zorbapastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us through Facebook, and I occasionally tweet, but not very much.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Here's a listener now, Zorba, in Deerfield, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about POTS syndrome.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell our listeners what that is and who has it?
My daughter has it. She's 21 years old now, almost 22.
Mm-hmm.
It's a postural orthostatic
tachycardia syndrome.
Syndrome, yes.
Very good. Excellent. So when did she first get it? Tell us about her.
When she was a freshman in college.
Mm-hmm. What happened?
She was walking back from class mm-hmm. to her dorm room and just passed out.
Uh-huh.
And at first, the parents, we thought, well, she's not eating right. And
sure.
kind of wrote it off as that. Then 3 months later, it happened again
mm-hmm.
while she was walking. Wasn't sitting or standing up, that type of thing. But it happened again, so we took her to the doctor and said, well, she may have this, but not real for sure. And then it started happening more frequently into the, you know, where it happened biweekly than weekly.
Wow.
So then mm-hmm. we know we had a big problem.
Right.
So we took her to University Hospital of Madison there.
Uh-huh.
And got tested, the tilt table test, and she failed that immediately.
Mm-hmm. So the tilt table test for our listeners is you put people on a table, you tilt them, and then you look at see whether or not their pulse slows down. Because if it slows down, it should. There's certain times your pulse should speed up, and in POTS syndrome, it does the exact opposite. So when you need to have a faster pulse, you actually get a slower pulse, and so you faint.
Mm-hmm.
You faint at fall. So what do? Do they put her on a beta blocker?
They put her on, I don't remember all mm-hmm. the names for all these medications, but over the last 3 years, she's been on 6 or 8 different medications.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But the first one they started mm-hmm. on to make your more volume of blood in your system.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then the other one's to make your blood vessels bigger,
mm-hmm.
and then a lot of salt.
So how is she now? Tell me what's – obviously there's something not – there's something not perfect, or you wouldn't be calling. What's going on?
Right.
There?
Well, it's been 3 years, and we took her up to Mayo Clinic 6 months ago.
Sure, tell us about that.
They did about 19 different tests over 3 days, mm-hmm. and basically confirmed she has it, mm-hmm. and said there's no cure except for possibly time. Mm-hmm. So 5 years is what it takes to grow out of this, mm-hmm. but and she's slightly getting better now, mm-hmm. I guess, but it's still happening.
Sure.
I wonder if there are any herbal remedies or sure. anything you've heard of to help this.
Uh-huh. Sure. I want to go back for a second. Now, when this occurs, does she collapse and fall down, or does she feel faint? Does she hurt herself?
When the first year, she didn't feel it coming. But mm-hmm. after the first year, what happens, her blood pressure
drops
to like mm-hmm. 30 over 60 right. is the worst right. it's ever been.
Right.
And then her heart rate will go up to 200, right. 250, right. and then she'll mm-hmm. pass out.
What does she do now? Does she get to the ground when this happens?
Right. As soon as mm-hmm. she feels, she can feel her mm-hmm. blood pressure going down, uh-huh. so that she'll just go lay down.
Uh-huh.
And then that way she doesn't faint and hit her head.
How long does it take her to recover then? Is it pretty instantaneous?
Approximately an hour.
An hour. She has to lay down for an hour.
Yeah,
so.
It's from 20 minutes to 2 hours.
Yeah. Well, the issue is with POTS syndrome, like they said, it does tend to go away with time, grow out of it. We don't know what happens. You know, there's something. It's an autonomic dysfunction. The autonomic nervous system regulates our heart rate, our pulse, our blood pressure. It's always there doing things, and hers is screwed up. It's doing stuff the wrong way. I mean, it's saying, hey, you know, we don't want to give enough blood to the brain, and all of a sudden you then become dizzy and you faint. You've gone to the UW. You've done a good job. You went to your doctor, then you went to the UW, then you went to Mayo Clinic. They did a bunch of testing to see if there was anything else. So from a scientific point of view, she's probably on the best medications that she can be on. She's on medicines right now?
Yes.
Good. So, and then salt, does she have a high salt diet? Has that helped?
It's actually basically like a horse pill, a salt. I don't remember the exact number.
So she takes salt every day. She takes a salt pill. Has that helped a bit? How often is she getting this now?
Probably every 3 weeks mm-hmm. she's doing mm-hmm. it, and one is coming on.
Yeah,
it's milder than it has been in the past, so I'm hoping it's coming, growing out of it.
Yeah.
Her body is fixing itself.
Right. It's fixing itself. I have no herbal cure for her. I think it sounds to me like she's getting really good medical care. And the real issue is her ability to actually say, hey, I've got to do something now. It's coming on, so that she doesn't get herself into a dangerous situation like crossing a street and all of a sudden it happens and she collapses. Can she drive a car? Does it happen when she's sitting down?
She can drive, but and she doesn't drive as much as she used to, I guess, mm-hmm. just because she's just a little scared about it.
Sure. Well, the issue is to really keep her safe as her body cures. I don't know of any herbal cure that I think would help with this. I think keeping up with the docs, you've gone to two great institutions, UW and Mayo Clinic. It sounds like from this, it's happening less often. She's perceptive of it. I think it's just being down there. The usual stuff of exercise and diet, of course, are important because they help us with anything. And with time and with luck, this is going to go away.
Okay. Yeah.
I wish I had something else to offer you, but I don't know of anything else with POTS. And the main thing is to stay in the medicines and keep a good relationship with your doc.
Okay. Thanks for your help.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Thank you so much. 800-462-7413.
The problem is we don't have solutions for everything, and we wish that we did. And when you don't have a solution and you're still suffering, it's a very untenable solution mentally. It's like, when will it get better, and I don't know about this. And then all of a sudden you get anxiety that's associated with the actual event. She has to, you know, make sure that she stays safe. But the anxiety of not knowing exactly what's going on and when it gets better mm-hmm. bothers not just her, but her back bench, her dad, her mom, her friends around there. They're all concerned, rightfully so. And with something like this, which does have a natural tendency to improve over time, it is sort of the old hang in there while you're doing it and remain as safe as you can. And sometimes there's just not a better answer than that.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And before the break now, Zorba, let's crack open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and tackle a listener email. This one came to us from a listener named Chad in Madison, Wisconsin. He writes, "Hi, Dr. Zorba. First-time emailer here. Lately, I've been focusing on eating more heart-healthy foods, and in achieving this, I've replaced all my cooking oils with olive oil. It is my understanding that uncooked olive oil is better than cooked. But when I am in the mood to sauté a veggie, I've been using a refined high-temperature oil in order to cut down on smoke and bitter, burnt flavors. So, am I trading in all the heart-healthy qualities of olive oil if I'm using a refined olive oil? I don't expect it to be as good for you as extra virgin olive oil, but might I as well be using peanut oil, or am I still making a good choice?"
Well, first of all, you know, you try to make good choices most of the time. So, you know, we might occasionally use an oil that's not any good. But the fact is, we know that extra virgin olive, we know olive oil, first of all, is just good for us. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any evidence that extra virgin olive oil is better for us than any other kind of olive oil. It just tastes better. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you look at the Mediterranean diet and the enriched Mediterranean diet study that showed that olive oil was useful, it's just the oil of olives is just a good oil. So if you want to use a refined olive oil for cooking, fine. Regular olive oil, sure, you can use it. Does it get rid of some of the nutrients? Yeah, some of the nutrients are gone, but hey, it's still really good oil. Mm-hmm. And if you want to use peanut oil that has a higher cooking temperature and is often used in Chinese food and others where there's a hot wok, by all means, use it. It's just a matter of how much oil we're actually having. Mm-hmm. The oil I wouldn't recommend are trans fats, and I used to recommend it all the time. I used to say, with margarine, not butter, and that was trans fats, and that's those are the things you want to tend to stay away from. So yeah, keep cooking with that refined oil because the olive oil is going to smoke and burn.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Oil bet he'll give you an answer. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, of course, on another interesting topic to talk about, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, social ties can preserve memory and slow brain aging.
Right. Very, very interesting, this. So first of all, this is a mouse study. You know, mice.
Oh, yeah,
Mice are social. Yeah. But they're looking at mice. And they're looking at mice who have a good, strong backbench. They got a lot of social interactions. And mice that are just kind of old couples. So you got, you know, one room and there are two old mice. You know,
okay.
Two old mice. Old mice have memory problems, too. And you've got another room and you got a bunch of roommates there. So, you know, like college roommates.
Yeah.
You know, college for mice. And they were housed together for 3 months. Okay, 3 months. They either had six roommates or they had like the odd couple. And then put them into sort of mouse post-retirement. So mice retire too. They want to have a little bit of food. They want to do their usual mouse things. And they challenged the mice to recognize a toy, plastic car that had moved to a new location. Because mice like to like move things around. They like to decorate their mouse abode.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And they discovered that the paired mice, we're laughing about this, but they discovered the paired mice had no idea where objects had moved. These are objects that meant something to them because they were associated with food, whereas the mice that were a bunch of friends, they were able to move things from place to place. They were able to do things. things. Now, they did a second thing, and the second thing is really very important. So mice are always looking for escape routes, right?
Okay.
They're always looking. They got to get away from stuff. Mm-hmm. How do I get down that hole? And they're always looking around to find out where the exit is.
Yeah.
Just like you are when you get on an airplane. Don't you always look at the exit route to get out of the airplane? And they found out the couple's mice, when they changed the exit route, were not able to learn it as quickly as the mice who had a bunch of roommates. So the mice who had roommates, when they changed the exit routes, which were these little holes in the ground, the roommate mice were able to get much more information, kept their brains, and were able to find those routes easier and quicker than the two old mice, the old man and woman mice, or two men or two women or whatever the mice were.
I'm in real trouble.
When it comes to exit routes or
when it comes to mice? To keeping the brain alive with a lot of social stuff.
That's right. But I'll tell you something that's very interesting, because this goes along with an article from The Lancet that we recently reviewed that showed that longevity and dementia that tend to be linked hand in hand, the older you get, the more likely to be demented, that one risk factor was hearing, that people who are hard of hearing that do not get hearing aids tend to have an increased risk for dementia. And because what do you do when you can't hear somebody? You don't talk as much. You don't interact as much, because you don't want to say what's happening. So even though this is a mouse study, I think it once again shows that social interaction is important to keep the brain alive, especially when you're older. Keep your friends.
1-800-462-7413, our number. That's 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Dayton, Ohio. Hi.
Hi, guys.
How can we help?
Well, I've noticed recently a light clicking in my right ear. It's kind of like a random clicking, like a tinkling in one of my ears, and I'm not sure what's causing it, what it might be, and I was just curious if you've ever heard of anything like this. You know, I've done a little online research, but that can lead to a lot of different conclusions.
Yes,
so I was wondering if I could get your help.
Yes, it can. Garbage in, garbage out, and good information in, good information out. So how long has it been going on for?
To be honest, I've noticed that I just recently gave birth to a baby, a girl, about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank
congratulations.
You. I'm just curious if maybe, you know, now that I'm not focused on the pregnancy as much, I've just started noticing this ear thing happening.
Sure.
If that could be possibly the...
it's an interesting idea. You know, you got to focus on the baby, of course. So the baby takes
time.
I mean, the pregnancy, you get to walk around, and the baby is, you know, eat, sleep, poop, repeat. You know, so there are all the other things that go on with babies. Allergies? Do you have allergies?
I don't.
Mm-hmm. You don't have allergies? Okay.
No.
Never had allergies before. Recent viral infection, cold, sore throat, anything like that?
Slight sore throat as of recently.
Mm-hmm. If you blow your nose, popped your ears at all?
Trying to do that, just to see if it kind of clears it out.
Sure. Has that cleared it out at all? Made any difference?
No.
Okay. Well, there's a tube between your nose and your ear called the Eustachian tube, and it's a ventilator tube. It's sort of equalize the pressure within the eardrum and the skull. So if you look at your eardrum, you've got the eardrum, and that basically seals the ear from the outside. And then you've got the inner ear, where you've got the organ of Corti, which is where you're actually hearing things. And then you've got the middle ear. And the middle ear has three little bones in there, the malleus, incus, and stapes, and they actually take and amplify the sound in the outer ear. And when we get an ear infection, for instance, we get it in that middle ear. Now, the middle ear, in order to stay at the right pressure, there's a little tube that goes in the middle ear called the Eustachian tube. That goes down to our nose. And so when we blow our nose and we pop our ear, what we're actually doing is inflating, increasing the pressure in that middle ear and pushing that eardrum out the other way. And that's when we blow our ears. We're actually, you know, expanding the eardrum. But that tube is a tiny tube, and it can get infected. It can get inflamed. And when it collapses and uncollapses, you can hear a clicking sound. It's that tube collapsing and uncollapsing. And there are a couple of treatments for it. First of all, it usually does go away with time, but what may help is a steroid nasal spray. So Flonase, and it comes in a generic at Costco and a bunch of other stores. It used to be by prescription, but now it's over the counter without a prescription. It is a steroid nasal spray that really works well. And what you do is you lean your head back as far as you can, squirt in each nostril, two squirts in the morning, two squirts in the evening. You got to wait a minute or two between the squirts, but you got to really tilt your head back because you want to get it into that little ostium, it's called, that little opening, to try to decrease the inflammation that's in that tube. And if you do two squirts morning and in the evening, usually within a week or two, this will go away. That's okay. What it's from. It could have also been when you were, how, tell me about your delivery.
It was very fast. It was about 3 hours from the time my water broke.
So it was about a three-hour delivery. How long did you push for?
About 10 to 15 minutes.
So sometimes during the pushing, that can also occur, and you can just get some inflammation there. But I would do the steroid spray, and I think that will probably take care of it.
Wonderful. Okay. Great. I'll give it a try.
Okay. Okay. You take care now. Congratulations on that baby.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Zorba.
You're welcome. Thank you. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, you look like you're having a little too much fun. So let's give your naysayers a voice by firing up another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from a listener named William. He writes, Dr. Zorba, on a recent program, you referred to sparkling water as just water with bubbles, and you said that it does nothing in particular. However, the bubbles in what is more accurately called carbonated water are carbon dioxide, some of which is dissolved in the water, forming a weak carbonic acid. It has a beneficial effect in some people, paradoxically calming an acid stomach, while in some others, it contributes to the production of kidney stones. In other words, it is not an inert substance.
Well, first of all, I don't agree that it produces kidney stones. I don't think there's any good evidence for that. You can drink all of the seltzer or carbonated water you want to. I don't think there's any evidence of that. Second of all, accurately, I think you can say sparkling water or carbonated water, and pretty much you'll know that. The language, the thing about the English language is we have a variety of ways of doing it. Now, most people don't say sparkling water. They may say club soda, which is a little bit different, or they may say carbonated water. But they're right, absolutely right on. It is dissolved. It is gives a sort of an almost bitter taste to it. But I guess you're right. It's not completely inert, but it's pretty close to inert. So I will accept one-third of the disagreeing with the doc.
Well, what about the calming an acid stomach?
Does it calm an acid stomach? Some people drink that and they say they feel better. My mother used to say, why don't you drink soda with the fizz out of it and you'll feel better. A lot of things calm the stomach, especially the fact that you think something will calm the stomach will often calm the stomach.
Placebo effect. Did something Zorba say get you charged up? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or just sending an email to us
Zorba at WPR.org.
Another listener is waiting, Zorba. See if we can help him or her in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Yes. About 3 years ago, I started in my right ankle. Started to swell. I did not have any injury to it, just all of a sudden. And that has continued. I've had three cortisone injections, which really haven't helped at all. The last one was 1 month ago, and it helped for about, maybe a week. I felt that it didn't hurt that much. It seems that when I walk just even a half hour, then that ankle will swell. And I put ice packs on it and elevate it. The swelling never completely goes down. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I thought if you can use ice packs and that helps take down some of the swelling, why couldn't cryotherapy be used? Do you know anything about that?
About what kind of therapy did you say?
Cryo.
Cryotherapy. Yeah, sure, cryotherapy might work. You know, there are, you can get little gel packs and you put that around the ankle and put that in the ankle, and sometimes that'll work and that'll be quite effective. You certainly definitely could use that. That would be okay to use. We know that cold can help pain. We know that. We also know heat can help pain. And we just know that it's called counter sensations. We know Bengay, as it evaporates and it smells and it has menthol in it, also helps pain. We know that massage helps pain. So we know that the things that we often do to a joint will help pain and discomfort. It doesn't rehab it, but it actually does something to it. So if you went somewhere and you put your leg in there or your arm in there and it chilled it and it felt better, I would continue doing that and see whether or not that would work for you. But I don't think it's not going to actually change the situation as it is. You know, we doctors often give pills, and we say, well, take this pill, it'll get rid of your pain, and then you'll be able to walk better. Well, we did that with opioids, and look what we got. We got an opioid crisis. So we make a lot of mistakes, too, because we were giving opioids willy-nilly. And then we give anti-inflammatories, very good drugs, but if you're taking it when you're older, it can disturb your kidneys, and it can cause a GI bleed. So again, side effects from the pills. Tylenol being the safest, but if you overdose on Tylenol and drink, you get liver failure, so that has a side effect too. Cold probably has less side effect than anything I've just mentioned. So,
okay, well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We appreciate
Good luck to
the
you.
Call. Thank you. And before we head out today, Zorba, let's tackle another listener email. This one comes to us from a listener in Norman, Oklahoma. Dear Zorba, if you burst your eardrum, do you need to wait some amount of time before you fly? I'm wondering if while it's healing, it could burst again on the plane.
Well, if the eardrum is burst and it hasn't healed, then you don't have to worry about flying because air is just going to go through the eardrum that actually burst. Is there an absolute amount of time that's waited? That's kind of a good question because often the eardrum will flap open and then heal right away, especially if there's not an infection involved. So I would just take Sudafed before getting on the airplane. If it burst, I'd probably wait a week or 2 weeks, you know, just to get something to heal. But I would definitely take Sudafed if it bursts, and I would do that probably for like 3 to 6 months to make sure that it does not burst again.
Mm. Have a question for Zorba? He's all yours. Just post it to our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor On Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor On Your Health.
For more Zorba Pastor On Your Health, including episodes, recipes, and tips mentioned on the program, visit ZorbaPastor.org. This year, we're celebrating the show's 25th anniversary, and we want to hear from you. How has Zorba helped you out? What have you learned from the show over the years? Leave us a message at 800-462-7413.